Night Dog, walking you to the ballot box.
28 minutes to the top of the hour. You're listening to Night Talk. My name is Oliver Dixon. Thank you so much for joining me here on Night Talk. Really do appreciate it. The Democratic Alliance, they have a campaign trail, like every other party, I guess, that is on the ballot. Have you been able to identify what the DA's campaign strategy may be? What the core messaging in their campaign may be? And very specifically, how that relates to other opposition party. Because to me, it seems like the DA's, I guess, how they choose to position themselves and how they choose to message their place inside the South African political competition is to simply say it's us against everybody rather than, hey, we're an opposition party contesting in an election, hoping to unseat the governing party. That used to be the election meshing. Now it seems to be, hey, it's us and everybody else, even the smaller guy that we don't know that hasn't yet been on any ballot, and we don't quite know how many people support this particularly new thing, but we're seemingly a little bit afraid of them because how dare they, you know, choose to challenge us. That's the conversation I want to have, and I want you to be a part of it. Give me a call, 086-000-2032. That's the number to dial, 086-000-2032. If you want to send me a WhatsApp voice note, the number to dial is 0614-104-107 for your WhatsApp voice notes. Richard Poplack joins me for this conversation. Richard, you took a shot of Russian vodka every time John Steenhuisen said Songezo, Zibi, and Rise Mzansi. Are you sober?
I think I'd be dead by now if I did that. But I take it every 10 times, he says Songezo, Zibi. So, I'm staying semi-sober. But yes, he does seem to have a little bit of an obsession with Rise Mzansi and Songezo Zibi. Hopefully he can get over it in time to start campaigning for real for what we are told, Oliver, is a very important election.
Yeah. Is Songezo Zibi the boogeyman?
Well, he certainly does seem to be. I mean, I think what Rise Mzansi has been able to do is sort of inhabit the center among the Twitterati, or the Xerati, or whatever the kind of Twitter class is now called in South Africa. So I think they've inhabited the center lane in a very effective way. They've campaigned very well. They've captured a lot of, I would say, the intelligentsia's sort of imagination. There hasn't been a true coherent centrist party in South Africa, I'd say, since the Thabo Mbeki era of the ANC. So in a weird way, they to many voters, I think they seem refreshing in their nostalgic sort of conjuring of a previously amazing version of the ANC. So it's sort of this weird kind of future forward, backward looking scenario that we happen to be in right now. And I think it's freaking a lot of people out because that's where a lot of middle class South Africans want the country to go. We're a conservative people.
Yeah.
We're fiscally uneducated. We're socially relatively conservative. We're not particularly inventive politically, and that centrist position that Rise Mzansi seems to be inhabiting right now seems to be an enormous threat to the other opposition parties out there right now.
The tagline Rise Mzansi is sort of, well, we're the adults in the room, you know, and that's sort of the position that they're trying to take. Is John Steenhuisen the petulant, annoying teenager in the room if Rise Mzansi is the adult in the room?
I think it's a little more complicated than that. And I think we have to give the DA some credit because, you know, they are a massive organization. They have a ground game in most of the provinces in the country. In some provinces, their operatives and their politicians are amazing. You look at Pappas in KZN. You look at Alan Wynd running the Western Cape. These are moderate, measured, wise politicians who understand that you can't oversell the message and you can't overcook what it is that you're selling. Where the DA absolutely falls down is its federal executive, run by the inimitable Helen Ziller, and of course its leader, John Steenhuisen, who is at best toxic, at worst kind of like the politician's version of nuclear waste. I'm not sure anyone particularly likes John Steenhuisen. So you have this huge disparate organization that in many cases, here in Gauteng, for instance, there's Jack Bloom, their shadow minister for health, has been doing the Lord's work for the last, I don't know, 15 odd years, trying to get the Gauteng Health Department to do something to help the people of this province. He truly is a saint among men. And then you have this federal executive and the front-facing end of the National Party, who are just a complete disaster and don't seem to have any ability to craft a narrative that appeals to any South Africans, let alone the majority. So it's this very weird construction that seems to have gotten out of control. And in a way, it truly is a shadow version of the ANC.
Yeah. So perhaps then this does, let's separate for a second John Steenhuisen and the DA. Their sources of anxiety might be different. How much of John Steenhuisen's anxiety at this moment is job security?
I would like to think a lot, but I don't have the trust in the DA that it would that it would fire certain people who deserve firing. I mean, you look at someone like Helen Ziller, who should have been dislodged from her position many, many years ago. She's completely toxic. She appeals to absolutely no one in the majority of this country. And when I say the majority, I mean, black voters have no interest in that woman whatsoever. She's absolutely toxic. And she's still there, and she's still a
How is
predominant
that
voice in the party.
true, Richard? How's that true if Helen Ziller has been the most successful and effective at growing the DA's voter share?
At growing the DA's voter share. Well, I mean, if we sit back and try to analyze her career, what we're looking at is her rise coincided with the ANC's decline. So we have to ask, was it the ANC that was losing, or was it the Helen Ziller's DA that was winning? And I think at a certain point they realized that they had to try to formulate some version of manufacturing wider appeal. And that is why they try to cultivate relationships with other party, Ahang, why they try to cultivate Musi Mamane and try to promote him as, or they did, that they elevated him as a leader. You can argue perhaps that may have been too early, but the truth is that there was a point where the party understood that to generate appeal to the majority of this country, you had to be representative. You had to look like what the country looked like. So I think
So wait, let me
Helen
pause.
Ziller,
You're saying
yeah,
Helen Zille
go
was
ahead.
just at the right place at the right time.
That's exactly what I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm saying. And I think when the party grew under her leadership, that was because the ANC started flailing. You cannot, as an opposition party anywhere in the world, Oliver, I want you to imagine the ideal governing party that you could campaign against. Think about it. They steal, they lie, they cheat, they destroy, and they ruin.
Sounded like you're describing Eddie Guerrero there, but okay.
But this is the point. If you're an opposition party and that's the majority party that you're fighting against, that's an absolute gift. I mean, how do you screw up against a governing party that does all of those things consistently with no breaks? That's the ANC. They are the eternal and munificent gift to opposition parties, and yet we live in a country in which opposition parties simply cannot capitalize on that gift.
Yeah, on the job security question, Musi Mamane lost 1 million votes when he was the DA leader in 2019 on the ballot. If John Steenhuisen loses 1 million votes, is the DA firing him? Do you see that
I
happening?
think they should. I think they absolutely should. Whether or not he'll face the axe, I have no idea. And I have, I'll be honest. My instinct is that he'll get another shot at it. Why do I think that? I think there are different standards, certainly in the executive of the DA, for white leaders and for black leaders. I'll be frank. And I think that Steenhuisen, should he lose a million votes, will not face the same kind of destruction that Moosey faced. No, yeah. I don't think that.
Is it unusual to you that a party contesting in the election pays so much attention to other opposition parties, especially those that didn't want to join its little stockfell?
Absolutely. I think it's a bizarre election strategy. And I mean, I'll go back to this notion of, on the ground, there are DA politicians who are just amazing. They care about their communities. They understand how our parliamentary system works, how our legislative system works, how South Africa works. There are individual DA politicians. Again, I'll name check them. Jack Bloom is a great example of DA politicians who have done amazing, amazing work, and truly that they should be sainted for it. Then you have the federal executive, where there is this myopia, this almost institutional blindness when it comes to generating messages. On X, that's where most of South Africa's intelligentsia seems to get into the cage match and have this disgusting mud wrestle. Yeah. But it really is where so many of the opinion makers in this country actually generate their opinions. I mean, it just is. So you would like to think that after, almost 20 years of social media, the DA would have crafted a very strict, a very disciplined, and a very regimented social media policy. They've done none of that. They're right there throwing the jelly into the cage, stripping down to the bikinis and getting ready nasty. And I think that's a terrible way for a party in a conservative country to conduct itself. Steenhuisen's messaging has been relentlessly negative. It's very strange. We're told so often that the DA has done amazing work in the Western Cape and the other municipalities or regions in which it has governed, but we're hearing that less and less and less and less. The positioning that the DA has engaged in this election campaign has been relentlessly negative. Less and less of it against the ANC, more and more of it against other opposition parties. That to me feels like a recipe for disaster.
Yeah. Give us a call, 086-000-2032, 086-000-2032. I'm taking your WhatsApp voice notes on 0614-104-107. I'm in conversation with Richard Poplack, and we're talking about the DA and their seemingly fearful position on Rais Mzansi and their opposition to Rais Mzansi. Richard, what's the DA's campaign strategy? What's their campaign messaging, and what's their campaign strategy? And do you see a congruence between the two?
This is a party at the federal and messaging level that has no discipline. So I think they went into this campaign saying, we are going to campaign on the fact that the municipalities and the provinces that we govern, or the province that we govern, have the cleanest audits, are successful in job creation, are mitigating corruption, are mitigating load shedding. So I think at the start, there was this sense that the messaging would be positive. But there's been this decline since then that has sort of slunk into this relentless quagmire of negativity. That, I think, is because Rais Mzansi's messaging has been so effective. Their inhabiting of the center has been so effective. You're looking at a campaigner, Songezo Zibi, who not only as a journalist and as an analyst understands the political space in what I would describe as a almost a prophetic or a intuitive way. And you're contrasting that campaigning with the clunkiness of the DA's federal structure, which has reacted to these new, and I wouldn't consider them threats. I would consider them positive competition, in a way that is almost hysterical. It's like, guys, take a chill, drink some chamomile tea, sit down, understand that the you know th this marketplace is actually yours to dominate. I mean, Oliver, if we are to sit down and think about what the DA actually should get in this election, after years of load shedding, of corruption, of relentless misery, of an atrocious Cyril Ramaphosa presidency, is anything less than 35% even acceptable?
Yeah, it's 20 million South Africans that currently seeming well at some point at their best. It was 18 million South Africans well, 18% of the electorate. My apologies there. 20% of the electorate, 18 million South Africans that voted for the Democratic Alliance. That's a significant number. That's a really, really serious number. Can you imagine a place where one in every three South African voters vote for the DA, if not now, ever?
Yes, I can. I mean, here's an interesting statistic that people seem to forget. The National Party in the first election in 94, which, by the way, is almost 30 years ago next week, well, is 30 years ago next week, got 21% of the vote. Now, people seem to forget that. Now, you know, not all of those votes for the National Party during the 94 election were white people. They weren't. The statistics are there. You can break them down. That is what the DA ultimately had to build on. 21%, the National Party. Okay, that's like the Nazi Party running in Germany. You know, once democracy has been instituted, and they still get one fifth of the vote. Right? Anything less than 35% for the DA seems to me to be an abject and complete failure. The federal executive should go, the leader should go, a absolute wiping away of their comms team should go. It should be an absolute bloodbath. But we'll see. I mean, you know, as the polls stand right now, we're looking at tops 25%, which I would imagine would be an enormous failure for a party running against the ANC.
Is the ANC worried about the DA? Do you imagine that they are?
No, I don't. I don't even think the ANC is campaigning in this election. I mean, first of all, they're broke. No, I mean, you know, I don't think they're campaigning. I think, you know, it's interesting. You know, you read so often that that the market has priced in a coalition government after this election. You know, that's why the rand hasn't collapsed. That's why foreign direct investment hasn't just poured out of the country, hasn't really changed. But the ANC has priced in a coalition government as well. So all they're doing is sitting back going, well, look, if we get 43%, then we'll see who we team with. If we get 47%, then we'll see who we team with. They know they're not going to get a majority. My opinion, they'll get slightly under that. They can pick up some rats and mice individual party, or maybe they have to team up with the EFF or MK. We shall see. But the truth of the matter is, they're completely unconcerned about what the DA does. Because they will have their pick of coalition partners, and they will be absolutely, perhaps even more in a position of power, should they be in the 45% range, come post-election.
Does it
So no,
serve the
I don't think they're
DA?
worried at all.
Does it serve the DA well that on the opposition spectrum of options that will be on the ballot, that there are parties that are actually deranged, that are actually saying impossible things, improbable things, and perhaps even illegal things, right? Parties like, for instance, the fear-mongering campaigning and almost incoherent type of messaging that you hear from Gaetan McKenzie, but seems to resonate so well with a certain sect of the electorate. Surely, if I'm the DA, I'm like, wow, I'm not the worst of the bunch, so we should be fine.
No, they're not. You know, this is the thing. These are gifts to a opposition party that considers itself 100% professional. Look at MK. This is purely a party of resentment. Okay? Jacob Zuma, I mean, my lord, the dude is back. I mean, you can't kill the guy. You know, he's back. MK is polling in some cases getting over 15% of the electorate, right? Obviously, the majority of that comes from KZN, but nonetheless, right? The gap, because opposition parties have failed to deliver a message of positivity, they've failed to make a case for our social liberal democracy that sells to especially young people, and that has opened this chasm for the PA. I think the EFF have also been atrocious over the past 3 years, and now you have Jacob Zuma who's returned. So you're looking at parties that really have no interest in governing. They really have no interest in delivering a coherent message. It's almost like a joke, kind of these bizarre constructions that are purely about contesting for power and seeking for rents. And so to me, that would be an opportunity for the DA every single time it seems to have been an existential threat. And I think that has more to say about the DA than it does about PA, EFF, or MK, or anyone else for that matter.
How much of the DA's reduction in voter share has to do with things that are not of their own making, but rather externalities that we're seeing the world over? That is to say, the rise of right-wing populist politicians and the popularity that they seem to be able to attract with very little input the world over. Happened in France last year, happened in the UK when Boris Johnson got to the top, happened in America and just about to happen again in America. It happened in Brazil and then unhappened in Brazil. Happens just about everywhere. And liberal or at least, you know, libertarian parties and perhaps even liberal egalitarian parties are finding themselves on the back foot because they choose to stick to the principle of their politics, for instance. And it comes at a cost. How much of the DA's reduction in voter share over the last 5 years is as a result of that?
Well, I mean, you've hit the nail on the head in a way. You know, read the DA's manifesto. They're a social democratic party. You know, with some minus with some ups and downs. Yes, minus BEE, sure, but that, you know, BEE, or let's call it a comprehensive and institutionalized affirmative action policy, doesn't necessarily remove them from the social democratic rubric, right? Yeah. When you look at, you know, they're not saying they're going to stop paying grants. In fact, in some cases, they're saying they're going to
pay more
increase the grant, right? So when you look at their manifesto, they're a social democratic party. When you listen to their messaging, especially at the federal level, especially when they're speaking to the Twitterati or the intelligentsia, they're using the same messaging as the American right. They're talking about wokeism. They're talking about radical leftism, right? You have Helen Ziller, who wrote a book called Go Woke, Go Broke, right?
Yeah.
So, you're talking about a party that at its highest messaging level has adopted the discourse of a country on the other side of the world that in many ways has no relationship to our social construct whatsoever.
Didn't Helen Zille embrace the NRA at some point? I digress.
I believe it. But yes, there is a pro-gun party, a pro-gun constituency within the DA right now. All of this right-wing resentment politics that you're speaking of, the DA has tried to absorb and tried to, I wouldn't even say they've tried to, but in a way, the party is this clunky monster that on the left side is social democrat, on the right side is anti-woke, and uses the same discourse as Fox News in America. How this is supposed to be a coherent organization that is pitching to run a country at the bottom of Africa, I have no idea. And this comes back to, I think, Oliver, the key issue with the DA. Where is the discipline? Where is the intellectual rigor? Where is the desire to win? Where is where is the voice saying, let's dispense with this mediocrity and focus?
Yeah.
Right? It's everybody doing exactly what they want because there's this impression that that in any free society you get to say and do exactly what you want. But that's not how a party is conducted. That's not how an organization is run. And so the failures, I think, have come from the top. They've been disastrous. They will be disastrous in this election. Anything less than 35% should be a decapitation event for anyone at the head of the DA. And this, I think, is exactly what the party is facing, regardless of what is happening in the rest of the world and regardless of what is happening here in South Africa. My belief is that the majority of South Africans are conservative yet moderate.
Yeah.
Socially conservative and moderate. Yep. Yeah. Go ahead.
Superfluous question, but in 30 seconds. Mm. Does Solim Samang have a thicker skin than all the other blacks in the DA? And past and present?
I've known Solly for a long time. Solly's bulletproof. I think you could hit that guy with a howitzer and he wouldn't blink. He's a tough guy. He comes from Pretoria. You know,
I guess Pretoria really does create tough people if they're not deranged in North America.
Yeah,
Richard,
it's Solly and Elon Musk. There you go.
Thanks a lot for your time and your insights. Really do appreciate it, Richard Poplack. It's a minute after 11 o'clock. Let's take your final news bulletin with Greg Hoss. On the other side of that, it is the open line.